There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume.
We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass,
or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want, because this is...
Mystery Playhouse. 90.1.
Good evening, and welcome once again to the Mystery Playhouse. I am the Count, your host of horror. Yes. Come in. I was just going through some of my old letters, like this one from my old friend Judas Iscariot. He asked me here if I could think of a financial way to turn a profit. I told him I couldn't think of any, but recommended he hang in there. Yes. Now, this is a note from the original Wright brothers. They wanted to fly like me. I told them they must be batty, huh? I went on to say, however, that flight was for folks who were on a superior plane, huh? Yes. By now, they probably figured it out, though, anyway. I always say two rights don't make a wrong, huh? All right, okay, so that one may have been pushing it, but then again, you'll never know about those Wright brothers. They may surprise you and fly in the face of logic, huh? But enough on the Wright brothers. Perhaps one parting shot. You have to admit that they did have the right altitude, huh? But about tonight's show, rest assured it's anything but plain. We hear the Shadows' Legend of the Living Swamp, as well as Escapes, the Man Who Would Be King. But first, it's Jack Benny in suspense with The Faces of Me, You're So Scary!
Autolite and its 98,000 dealers bring you Mr. Jack Benny in tonight's presentation of Suspense. Tonight, Autolite presents the story of a successful bank robbery, including the astounding history of the unhappy man who perpetrated the crime. It's called The Face is Familiar. Our star, in his first dramatic appearance of the season, Mr. Jack Benny.
See, I still can't understand why they picked me, of all people. Me, of all people. That's why it's so hard to believe. That it all happened, I mean. But it did. It really did. Just because I like to go to the railroad station, walk around, look at the trains, study faces. I never forget a face. I never forget a train, either. But it's easier to forget a face. But a matter of fact, I remember some faces would be a lot better for me to forget. Like Harry Edmonds' face, for instance. That's the day it all started. The day I saw Harry Edmonds way across on the other side of the terminal. At the station. He was talking to a big fellow. Harry's face I remembered right away. I never saw the big fellow before.
But I get going, Harry.
But you can't pull off the job.
I stuck up a bank before.
Yeah, sure, and they'd spot you the minute you walked in.
I know you, too. This is your hometown.
Oh, sure. Neither one of us is right.
Let the boss decide. Come on.
I thought about it on the train, Dom. We need somebody new.
We're not splitting the stake with anybody else. It goes three ways now.
Look, if we have to, we have to. And if we wait too long, we got to let the whole thing go until next month.
Then we wait.
Not for me. This town is too hot for me. Somebody is liable to recognize me.
Yoo-hoo, Harry! Harry Edmund!
Who's that?
Where?
Over there, some guy calling you.
Harry, Harry Edmund, you old son of a gun.
Brush this guy.
Well, well. Good old Harry Edmund.
You got me mixed up with somebody else, mister.
No. No, I haven't. I know who you are.
Yeah?
Harry Edmund. You used to live on 12th Street and 2nd Avenue.
What city?
This city. Here. Don't you remember me, Harry?
Can't say as I do, so.
Harry! Oh, Harry Edmund! Harry! Hey, Harry, no kidding. You remember me, don't you? Seriously, Harry, you remember Pinky Smith? He had a wart on his finger. And Alan Davenport. He had a birthmark on his neck. Well, I'm Tom Jones. I have nothing. I'm clean.
Brush him, get rid of him.
No, wait. I think we got our answer.
Yeah.
I think we got the engine paid to handle some of our bank business.
Harry, try to remember. Go ahead, try to remember.
Yeah, 12th Street and 2nd Avenue.
That's right.
Well, I used to live around there somewhere, but I still can't...
Let me give you a hint.
Go ahead.
Remember Gordon's candy store on the corner? And remember the great bunch of guys who used to hang out there?
Yeah.
And remember those pesky kids who used to tag along, nagging, saying, let us in. Can we come too? Always pesky. Always trying to horn in. But one of them was me, Tom Jones. Remember me now, Harry?
What'd you say your name was again?
Jones. Tom Jones.
The name sounds very familiar.
We grew up together.
Yeah. Well, what are you doing these days?
Oh, a little bit of everything. And you?
Banking.
Oh, money, eh?
Yeah.
Well, that's a nice feel. Well, I gotta go look at the people. It was good talking over old times with you, Harry.
Hey, come on.
Oh, wait a minute. You mind waiting a minute? What's your name again?
Tom Jones. Remember?
Oh, yeah, Tom. Yeah, well, wait a minute.
Well, I'm kind of busy. Lots of appointments this afternoon.
Oh, I'd like talking over old times with you, Tom. Maybe we could have a drink and dinner.
Well...
On me.
Oh, well, yes.
Good, except that Joe has an appointment here. Joe, couldn't you break it? Wait here a second.
Tom Jones.
Tom, yeah. Joe, come here. Let me talk to you a second.
What?
Now I know I got the answer. I know I found the pigeon who's going to do it for us.
Let the boss figure that out.
I tell you, I got it figured. Look at that guy.
Yeah.
He is it.
Him. He don't look like nothing.
Right. He's nothing. Isn't that what we want? Nobody that anybody ever saw before. Nobody that anybody would ever think of looking at twice.
Job's ready.
And if we don't pull it this afternoon, we lose another whole month. So, come on. Oh, Joe can make it. He is going to join us. Joe, I forgot to introduce you. Have you met...
It's Jones, for heaven's sake.
Yeah.
Tom Jones,
yeah. Well, Tom, meet Joe, and don't get sore. He's a kid I grew up with, Joe. We're going to have a great time talking over old times. You know, 2nd Avenue. That's right. And your name is Tom Jones.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I must admit it, it is a difficult name to remember because it's so common. Don't you think so?
Oh, yeah, I sure do.
Oh, certainly be nice talking over old times.
Oh, yeah, I haven't talked over old times in a long time.
Well, Harry Edmund.
Yes, sir, and good old,
Tom.
Tom, yeah. Better get started.
Where to?
Want you to meet another old friend of mine.
Harry must have been doing very well. Very well. I mean, for a man in the money game. He had a brand new sedan with real leather upholstery. I know it was real leather because that used to be my game. Leather upholstery. Not much money in it, at least not for me. But I didn't let Harry know that. No, sir. What if he ran into another old friend from Second Avenue and the other old friend said, "How's old Tom Jones doing?" And Harry said, "Not very well. Not very well at all." Well, that can hurt a man once it gets around.
And then what happened?
Well, when I came back to the main office, I said I want 40% commission from now on.
Really?
But, of course, that would have made me a partner, the boss said.
Uh-huh.
After all, Harry, I'm not the kind of a guy who can be cooped up in an office. I've been a road man. The lure of the open road.
Oh, yeah.
The call of the open street. See, I'm an outdoor type of salesman. Something of the pioneer kind, you know? Pioneer?
Yeah, pioneer, yeah.
You see, there are those salesmen who are made for offices and those of us who get out and break the plane, so to speak.
Tom, you surprise me.
Oh, I could keep going for hours, Harry. Literally hours.
Yeah, well, why don't you hold on to some of it till we have dinner?
Oh, sure, sure. Hey, I bet you never expected that pesky little kid who always used to hang around to get so big in his field.
Oh, I certainly didn't. No. We could sure use somebody like you in our outfit, Tom.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, now, that's very flattering, but I'm not sure it's right for me. I'd have
I bet I could get you, I don't know, maybe $10,000 a year to start with.
$10,000 a year, you say?
Yeah.
Well, sure like to think about it.
Well, you talk to my boss. Maybe he can convince you.
I'm willing to listen, Harry. I'm willing to listen, all right. The business Harry was in was mighty successful, if the home of his boss was any indication. The beautiful big yellow house with a lovely green front door, and you could tell it was the home of a man who had worked his way up and knew what to do with what he had. Inside, it was very homey. Two fireplaces in the living room that looked like they were burning. A beautiful plaid carpet that must have been a real Oriental, and they wanted me in the business. Me, Tom Jones, of all people.
Brandy, Mr. Jones?
No, thanks. Thanks. Spoil my dinner.
Cigar?
Well.
All clear Havana?
Oh, I can see that. I can always tell a good cigar just by looking at it. I know cigars, and faces, and trains.
You're a very well-informed man, Mr. Jones.
Well, you're kind of unusual yourself.
Why?
You remember my name.
Don't most people?
Most people don't even recognize me. People I've known for years.
Is that so?
Now, don't get me wrong. It's an asset in my business. See, people who tell me no when I try to sell them something say, come back next year. But I come back next week, and they don't even remember I was in the first time. Believe me, a face like mine doesn't come along every day.
I like you, Tom. Mind if I call you Tom?
Certainly not, Mr.
Just call me Boss. Everybody calls me that, especially people I like, and I like you.
I like you, too, Boss.
Then you're interested in coming into the organization?
Oh, I might give it a whirl. Let's put it that way.
I wouldn't want it any other way. A trial for both of us.
And the pay Harry mentioned?
Oh, I told him a starting salary, boy.
Let's talk about that at dinner. Come on, we'd better get started.
Isn't a 2:45 in the afternoon a little early for dinner?
We have a few errands to do. Excuse us just a minute?
Oh, of course, sure.
Like the idea?
Perfect. Nobody will ever remember him. I couldn't even describe to you what he looks like. Where's the satchel?
Right here, boss.
I thought you put the note inside.
Well, we wanted you to okay it first. Here, read it.
You are being covered by a gun from two different places in this bank. Do not send an alarm or you will be killed. Put $50,000 in the satchel. That's it. On a note.
How will you get them to take it in?
I always come up with the answer, don't I?
Yeah, sure, boss.
Come on, let's go.
Oh, we talked it over, and the boss likes you a lot.
For the last time, it's Jones. Tom Jones.
Yeah, well, I was Tom's only kidding, Tom.
Well, all right.
We better get started.
Where to first?
To the bank, Tom.
That's very kind, but completely unnecessary. I don't need my salary in advance.
I told you, this is a high-class outfit.
To the bank. Gee.
Autolite is bringing you Mr. Jack Benny in The Face is Familiar, tonight's presentation in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. This is Harlow Wilcox again. Tonight, the worldwide Autolite family is privileged to salute a distinguished member, the DeSoto Division of Chrysler Corporation. So, I've stopped in at my local DeSoto Plymouth dealers to learn all about the wonderful DeSoto's 454.
Well, you're right about the new DeSoto automatics, Mr. Wilcox. They are wonderful, and for many reasons. For instance, there's the great DeSoto 170-horsepower Fire Dome V8 engine, the world's most efficient engine design.
Well, explain why, Mr. Dealer.
The secret's in the hemispherical design of the combustion chamber. That's where your fuel is exploded to give you power. This design squeezes every last drop of power out of your fuel, lets you use regular gasoline for real economy. This, plus DeSoto's fully automatic power flight transmission, power steering, power brakes, and Autolite electrical equipment, are just a few of the many reasons why the 1954 DeSoto automatics put you ahead automatically.
Thank you, Mr. Dealer. Autolite is proud of its long connection with DeSoto and DeSoto Plymouth dealers everywhere. And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage Mr. Jack Benny in Elliot Lewis's production of The Face is Familiar, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Gee, isn't it funny how you wait a long time for your ship to come in? There I was, watching a train, and my ship came in. Just because I recognized Harry's face. Well, you gotta keep on your toes in this world. Because when opportunity knocks at your door, you gotta be all set to open it. Well, anyway, I'd opened the door, and before I knew it, we were downtown. The bank already? I hardly noticed we were moving.
Do you mind waiting a few minutes?
Well, not at all.
I like you, Tom.
Let me tell you, I like you, too.
I'm certainly glad Harry met you after all these years.
And I'm glad, too. I like Harry.
And I like you, too, Tom.
Tom, yeah. You know, I feel like I've known all of you. Just all of you since Second Avenue. Boss, I even feel like I grew up with you.
Well, that's very nice of you, Tom. Who's going to get the payroll?
Is that why we stopped at the bank? You pick up your own payroll?
Sure, why not?
For how much?
$50,000.
$50,000? And you pick it up yourself?
It's my money, and I worked hard for it. It's my way. And if you don't like my way of doing things, Tom...
No, not at all. I've always felt, personally, I've always felt that people should pick up their own money. Always. Especially if it's $50,000 or more. Besides, armored cars haven't been doing too well in the past few years.
I like the way you think.
Well, maybe we should all pick up the payroll.
Wouldn't that make us a little too conspicuous?
Yeah.
And besides, I want to discuss you a little more. And I think you'll work out.
Fine. Say, maybe Harry can pick up the money while we talk.
I wanted to discuss you with Harry.
Oh.
Well, how about Joe?
Joe picked it up last time. I don't like the same man going in twice in a row.
See, not Harry, not Joe, or you. Me?
I hate to ask you. You're not really part of my organization yet, and I don't like to see a man work unless he gets paid for it.
Well, I'd be happy to. Just delighted. Besides, I'm going to have to get used to large sums of money, and I guess there's no time to start like the present.
Now just take this satchel up to the window and give it to the teller. The withdrawal slip is inside. The teller will know exactly what to do.
Fine. Oh, sure, of course.
Now, boss, technically in.
Did you call me?
No. It's right ahead.
My, it's certainly crowded. So many people waiting in line.
Yeah.
People certainly must be doing well these days.
Yeah.
I'm very busy myself, you know.
So?
I have some friends waiting for me outside.
Good.
I was just wondering, if you weren't in a hurry, would you mind...
No.
Oh. These lines certainly move slowly, don't they?
Yeah.
Well, he certainly took long enough at that window.
Yeah.
I hate people who dawdle over money. Don't you?
I guess.
Your transaction isn't going to take very long, is it?
Nope.
Good. That big bag you're carrying had me worried.
Yeah?
What sort of business are you in?
Penny vending machines.
Penny? All those are pennies?
Something wrong with pennies?
Oh, no. No, of course not. Excuse me. I think I'll try that other line. My, it's certainly crowded.
I beg your pardon?
I say it's crowded. For such a big bank. Wouldn't you think they'd have more tellers?
I certainly do.
I mean, one, say, to handle pennies and so forth, you know. Well, there's one gone. I like the way that teller works.
I suppose.
Will your transaction take long?
Oh, no.
Good. I'm in a terrible hurry. Some friends are waiting for me on the outside.
Next, please.
Yes, madam.
Well, in 1950, my husband opened an account in his name, a savings account. Mm-hmm. Then he transferred it to a checking account. Then we split up that money and opened a joint savings account and joint checking account. But we found out we didn't really close the other savings account. Of course, we thought we did, so some of our checking deposits have been...
Look, don't you think you should see the manager instead of taking this teller's time?
I'll handle this, sir, if you don't mind.
Oh, no, not at all.
Madam, would you please take this up with the manager?
But...
If you don't mind, may I get to the window?
Well.
Yes?
The withdrawal slip is in the bag.
Oh, a withdrawal? Next window, please.
Now, just a minute. You in there, tell her. Open up.
Yes, sir?
See, I've been moving from line to line, and I insist you handle this.
I'm sorry, sir. I can't violate the rules for anyone.
But this is a very important matter, you know. This isn't just some piddling sum.
How much are you withdrawing, sir?
I believe it's $50,000.
Oh, you're quite right. That is a lot of money. Now, will you please remove this bag and go to the next window?
Well, all right. At least the lines are getting shorter.
Yes, they are.
Wouldn't you think a bank this size could afford a few extra tellers?
How do you mean?
Like, say, one kind of teller to handle only pennies and another kind to handle matters of $50,000 or more.
I beg your pardon?
I suppose that sounds a little strange, but you'd be surprised how it would speed things up.
Well, I'm sure.
And it needs it. See, I came in feeling fine, just fine. Now I'm nervous from waiting and waiting and waiting.
I'll be through in a minute.
Well, it's terribly important.
You see, some people are waiting for me outside.
Next, please.
Here you are.
20, 30, 40. Thank you. Next, please.
Yes, yes. Oh, wait, just a minute.
Something wrong?
I'll be back in a minute. My friends are calling me. Did you fellas call me?
No, no. Go back.
But someone honked the horn. I saw somebody else wave.
Go back.
A mistake. Just turn around and go back. We'll be here.
Oh, sure. Sure, of course. All right, sir. Here's the bag.
Your deposit slip, sir.
Withdrawal. The slip is on the inside. From time to time.
Is this a joke, mister?
Listen, you. I've had enough. Now, you can read, can't you?
Yes, sir.
Then don't dawdle. Do what it says. That's fine. That's much better.
Yes, sir.
Come on, come on, come on.
Go get it.
Well, here's the money.
Give me that.
Hey! Hey, Harry! Where are you going? Stop! Wait, what are you doing? Harry! Harry!
That got him. All right, Jenkins, take some rope down there and tie their hands.
I set off the alarm as fast as I could, officer.
Oh, come on, let's get down there. You can show me which one of those guys held you up.
All right, officer. I'm sure I'll remember it.
Hey, this is terrible.
Step back, buddy.
But it was me.
It was you what?
It was me, officer. Look, I took the bag in and I didn't know.
Are you kidding?
Tell her. Tell her, look at me.
I am. You must be nuts.
No, I'm not nuts. It's me. Don't you recognize my face? Look at her.
Nothing like it.
What did the fellow look like?
Well, he had a lean face. Or slightly fat. No, lean.
Oh.
And brown eyes. No. Oh, gosh, I don't know.
It was me. Look, blue eyes, see? Me. And I'm sorry. I'm terribly sorry.
Now beat it, bud. Now think hard.
I am, but it was the most nondescript face I've ever seen.
Well, that's pretty nasty, if you ask me.
Tell me what you remember.
I can.
I was standing there. I just counted out $40.
Look, and I walked up to the window.
Oh, it wasn't you. This fellow was about 6 feet tall. Or five and a half.
5 feet eight. I'm 5 feet eight.
And he had a real menacing look.
No, I was smiling. See, look. Look, I'm smiling. Look. Now do you remember?
Now, look here. Get out of here before I run you in.
Yes, sir.
Well, I remember now. He was 6 feet tall. He had red hair. And he was carrying a gun. He had a handkerchief over the lower part of his face. And he carried a cane.
Well, that's what happened. That was an eyewitness account of a bank robbery from the man who did it. Here I walked into the bank, robbed them of $50,000, and didn't even know I was doing it. Imagine. And nobody recognized me. They didn't know my face. You know, I bet I could walk into another bank and do the same thing. Nah, I better not.
Suspense. Presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, Mr. Jack Benny. Be sure you take part in the great Autolite family charity drawing now at your Autolite family car dealers.
No need to buy a thing. Just sign your name to the registration form he gives you. Ask him to sign the receipt portion. You may be one of 25 selected to name the recognized charities that will share a total of this $100,000 cash distribution on June 1st. Here are the car dealers in your territory who have the Autolite family charity drawing registration forms. DeSoto, Hudson, Dodge, Nash, Packard, Plymouth, Kaiser, Studebaker, Willis, and Chrysler. Visit them tomorrow. Fill out a registration form. Do your part to help favorite charities in your community share in this $100,000 cash distribution.
Suspense is transcribed and directed by Elliot Lewis, with music composed by Lucian Morowick and conducted by Lud Gluskin. The Face is Familiar was written for Suspense by Arthur Ross. In tonight's story, Sheldon Leonard was heard as Harry and Clayton Post as Joe. Featured in the cast were Joseph Kearns, Herb Butterfield, Gene Wood, Hi Averback, and Stan Farrar.
The Jack Benny Show may be heard every Sunday on the CBS Radio Network.
Geez, wasn't that scary, huh? The Face is Familiar. Boy, lucky Jack wasn't killed. Then he really would have been a face in the shroud, huh? Really? Let me tell you, you know, you could tell he regretted not being left holding the bag. Bag of money, that is, huh? Look, personally, I think he should withdraw from the banking business, huh?
How about you, huh? Yes.
No, seriously, though. I think he should do that or else do some more checking on his partners, huh? Seriously, though, because if he's not more careful with his new interest, he could become pounded daily, huh? For the rest of his life, even. Who knows? Then he'd really be subject to penalties with no chance for parole, huh?
Yes.
You see, Jack Benny was most famous for being a tightwad. In fact, it's said that the only reason he died in the first place was to avoid paying on his living trust, huh?
Yes.
In fact, I think his last words were simply, "Life is not worth it, huh?" So I guess you could even say that he willed himself to die, meaning he left everything to himself, huh?
Really?
You know, when it was his funeral, he requested cremation, since the ashes were to be put in a vase. He said a Benny scathed was a Benny earned, huh? You know, at another point, he wanted to be buried in a shoebox because he thought it would save his soul, huh? And speaking of saving, our next feature features the man who always saves the world. It's the Shadow Inn, Legend of the Living Swamp, Saul Scarrett!
The Shadow, who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. Years ago in the Orient, Cranston learned a strange and mysterious secret: the hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible shadow belongs. Today's drama, The Legend of the Living Swamp. Deep in the swampland, a young man stumbles his way blindly closer and closer to a bubbling patch of black slime known as Devil's Dip.
His glazed eyes show no recognition of his father's warning cries in the distance.
Randy! Old man, in the swamp, you don't scare me. No, sir. Randy Calhoun is going to pay his respects to Devil's Dip right now.
Randy, where are you?
They call you cemetery without tombstones, Devil's Dip. But that don't scare me either.
Randy, come back here.
There she is, bubbling and beautiful in the moonlight. Just a few steps more now.
Randy, you've gone crazy, boy. Get away from that dip.
I'm walking right into you with my chin out, Devil's Dip. Let's see you stop me.
Randy, stop. Oh, can't move. Oh, my leg. Ah! Randy, he's gone. My own son swallowed up by Devil's Dip.
Yes?
Mr. Cranston?
This is Lamont Cranston.
My name is Calhoun. Wilmer Calhoun. But I don't expect that you remember me.
Calhoun?
We met 3 years ago when you cracked the Lanning case down here.
Oh, of course. Yes, now I remember. How are you, Mr. Calhoun?
Not so good, I'm afraid, Mr. Cranston. Something terrible is taking place down here on our plantation.
So it seems to be the trouble.
Well, I know it sounds peculiar, Mr. Cranston, but it's the legend of Limbo Swamp come back. The legend started up again. It'll kill us all if you don't help.
What are you talking about?
My son was killed by it this evening, devoured by the swamp.
What?
While running to his rescue, I was felled by a paralytic stroke.
You're sure you're not letting your imagination get the better of you?
The legend has already struck, Mr. Cranston. It will continue to strike until every member of the Calhoun family has been claimed. You've got to help us, Mr. Cranston. You've just got to.
See what Calhoun meant now.
What's that, Martha?
This swamp country.
Yeah, it is pretty depressing, isn't it?
Mm. What did you make of that legend business Calhoun was telling you about, Lamont?
Well, as far as I could gather, Margot, a family was being consumed by man-eating swamp.
Oh, I'm almost ready to believe anything after being down in this part of the country for a couple of hours.
Well, we're almost there, darling. Oh, here's the drive-in road he told me to look for. I see two people on the front porch the swamp hasn't claimed yet.
Oh, yes, a young woman, a young man. They look like something out of Gone with the Wind.
It's pretty far gone, if you ask me. I don't think we should expect a very stimulating reception. After you, darling.
Thanks.
Well, good afternoon. Is this the Calhoun Plantation?
Never heard of any other name in these parts.
I assume you're Mr. Calhoun's son, Quentin.
That's right.
This must be your sister, Lucy.
Yes. You must be Mr. Cranston.
That's right. This is Miss Lane.
How do you do?
How do you do?
I don't think you care too much for this patch of land, Cranston.
Quentin, is that any way to talk to our guests? Now, take Miss Lane's bag up to her room. Daddy told us you were coming. We've been looking forward to your visit.
Thank you.
Your father said there was some kind of trouble, Miss Calhoun.
Oh, poor old Daddy. He's nearly out of his mind after what happened to Randy last night. Then with his paralysis.
Randy's probably the best off of all of us. He don't have to fight the swamp no more.
You sound pretty convinced about this swamp legend, Quentin.
Don't let me scare you, Cranston. Have a look for yourself. But keep your eyes open when you do.
Randy!
Good heavens, what was that? Daddy! That sounded like Daddy calling.
Come on.
Go ahead. Just the old boy seeing boogeyman again.
This way. His room's right down the hall here.
Randy! Randy, my boy!
Daddy! What is it?
What happened, Mr. Calhoun?
Randy. He walked out of the swamp. He's come back from the dead.
What are you talking about?
He tapped on the window, and then he walked away into the twilight whistling.
Listen.
I'll open the window.
There it is.
There is someone whistling.
Oh, it's Eli. Eli, the hired man. There. You can see him now. Eli?
Yes?
Did you tap on this window just a minute ago?
Why should I go tapping on folks' windows, Mr. Wilson?
That was you whistling just now.
Ain't no law again whistling, is there?
Oh, then it wasn't Randy. Randy didn't really come out of Devil's Dip after all. Oh, give me such a turn. Scared me half to death.
All right, Eli. Go back to your chores.
Yeah.
Miss Lane and I just arrived, Mr. Calhoun. Before something else happens, suppose you tell us what this is all about.
Oh, Oh, Mr. Cranston, Miss Lane, I didn't realize that you were here. The shock and the excitement of it all, I hope you'll forgive me.
Of course. Well, if you'll pardon me, I'll look after dinner.
Perhaps you'd better begin at the beginning, Mr. Calhoun.
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. Well, this whole crazy business started back with an Indian legend centuries ago, Mr. Cranston.
The swamp is a sort of altar of sacrifice?
That's right.
Yes, I've heard of such legends. What was the basis of sacrifice?
Well, once each century, an entire family, according to the legend, was to be sacrificed.
But that's fantastic.
Is it, my dear? Devil's Dip already has claimed my youngest son, Randy. And the legend says that the youngest should die first.
But couldn't Randy's death have been an accident?
An accident? And I suppose my paralytic stroke was an accident, too?
Yes, that is strange, isn't it?
The doctor's just left. He wasn't very optimistic.
There's been no improvement since last night, Mr. Calhoun?
You think I'd be confined to this wheelchair if I could get around some other way?
Of course not. Now that we're here, Mr. Calhoun, what is it you'd like us to do?
Anything, Mr. Cranston. Anything in the world that'll keep that cursed swamp from taking another life.
And you say you talked to the doctor yourself, Lamont?
Yes, he phoned right after dinner. He can't explain the paralytic stroke either. Calhoun is crippled, there's no question about it.
It's fantastic. Why are we taking this path towards the cottonwoods, Lamont?
Calhoun tells me Eli, the hired man, lives by himself in a shack down there, Margaret. I think we ought to have a little talk with him.
Mm.
Oh, here's his shack now, I guess. Hello, Eli. Miss Lane and I just dropped in to pay you a visit.
That's all.
Eli, do you believe in this swamp legend as strongly as the Calhoun family?
Ain't the swamp already grabbed Randy Calhoun?
Isn't it possible that Randy might have had a little too much to drink that night?
Randy was drunk on plenty nights, but he never headed down with no swamp before. He was drawn down to the swamp, just as sure as if it had a rope around his neck. He was drawn down, pulled under.
What about Quentin Calhoun, Eli? Could he tell us any more about Randy's death?
Quinn's a drinking fool like his kid brother. And we can tell what he'll do next.
And Lucy?
You keep an eye on her, Mr. Cranston. There's a lot more to her than that sweet-talking front you put on for company.
You don't have a very high opinion of the Calhouns.
People who live near the swamp don't trust nobody. Least of all, strangers.
Santa Margot, this flatboat's a little skittish.
I know now how Eli feels about the swamp, now that we're actually in it.
Yes, I'm beginning to feel it myself.
I still don't see what we're going to learn by poling through the swamp like this.
Maybe nothing, Margot. Not again.
Come up.
What is it?
Something's coming straight at me.
Oh. Margot, what happened?
Only an overhanging branch, but it looked like some kind of horrible snake.
Just your imagination.
What?
Wait a second.
What is it, Lamont?
Sounds like two people talking, yes. Quiet now, we'll stop the business.
You said you want to talk to me, Quentin?
That's right, Lucy.
Well, why in the world did you insist on coming all the way down here?
Just wanted to make sure we were alone.
I swear I don't know what you're driving at, Quentin Calhoun.
The legend, Lucy.
Legend?
What about it?
Do you believe in it?
Of course I do. Who down here doesn't believe it?
Somebody with a tricky mind could use that legend to advantage and maybe wind up with an inheritance.
Quentin Calhoun, are you suggesting...
I'm not suggesting anything, Lucy. I'm just thinking out loud.
Thinking how you might come out on top.
Maybe I am. We're all going to die in this stinking swamp without getting a nickel of that fortune rotten in the bank.
Quentin, what are you aiming to do?
Come along to Devil's Dip and see, Sister Lucy.
Come along and see.
Quentin, come back here. Quentin!
Come on, Margo, let's go.
Where to, Lamont?
We're going to tie up the boat. We head over to Devil's Dip. I think we ought to be there when Lucy and Quentin arrive. Come on, Margo, we're almost there.
I'm doing the best I can, Lamont, but this brush is so thick.
Help!
Listen.
Sounds like Quentin.
Help!
If I just get this branch aside, we could get to it.
Hurry, Lamont.
There. Good Lord, it is Quentin. He's in the quicksand.
Quick, Lamont, we've got to save him.
I think it's too late, Lamont. Nobody can ever reach Quentin Calhoun now.
Lamont are visiting the rundown plantation of Wilmer Calhoun. Already two members of the family have met terrible deaths in the black, marshy quicksand. The last, Quentin, who just a moment ago, Margot and Lamont tried desperately to save.
Quentin! Quentin!
He's gone, Margot. It's no use. Easy, darling.
The legend has come to pass. Rotten black pool is alive, Lamont. It's like a crawling evil thing.
Margo.
Sorry, darling. Two drownings in the swamp today.
Come on, you're going back to the house and lie down.
Lamont, what's it all about? You don't believe that filthy swamp has some weird power, do you?
I doubt it, Margo.
You think someone in the family, Lucy, maybe.
I definitely do, after that conversation we overheard between Lucy and Quentin.
Why should Lucy want to kill her own brother? And if she was responsible for Quentin's death, why didn't we see her down at Devil's Dip just now?
Yes, I'd like to ask Lucy those same questions, Margo. In person.
You're going to talk to her?
I am, Margo, and fast. You can find your way back to the house from here, can't you?
I think so.
I'll see you later. After Lucy's had a little chat with the Shadow.
Happy, Lucy?
What's that? Who's in this room?
Song on your lips and murder in your heart, is that it, Lucy?
Oh, must be mad. The room is empty, but I hear a voice.
The voice of the Shadow.
The Shadow?
Come for truth. The truth about this legend of the swamp. Is it the swamp that's killing this family off, Lucy?
Yes. Yes, it's the swamp.
It couldn't be that some person is responsible for these swamp deaths, could it, Lucy?
I don't know what you mean.
You understood very well when you were talking it over with Quentin near Devil's Dip.
How did you know about that?
The Shadow knows. You killed your brother, didn't you, Lucy?
No, Shadow, I didn't. I swear it. We talked, and then Quentin asked me to follow him to Devil's Dip. He started walking faster and faster. He got ahead of me. I heard a scream. And when I got up to the dip, Cranston and the girl were there. And Quentin was gone on the quicksand.
Was there anyone else around at the time, Lucy?
Well, I don't know. I thought I heard someone ahead of us when Quentin and I started for Devil's Dip.
Did you see this person?
There was only moonlight. And the foliage was so thick.
But you did get a glimpse, didn't you, Lucy? Who did you see?
We looked like... Like...
Yes?
Like... Eli.
I see. All right, Lucy, if you told the truth, you'll be protected from this deadly swamp curse. If not, your punishment will be harsh. Very harsh.
Mr. Calhoun? Mr. Calhoun?
Yes, what is it?
Mount Cranston, Mr. Calhoun. I'd like to talk to you.
Come in. Come in. The door's open.
I'm sorry to disturb you this time of night, sir.
That's all right. I couldn't sleep. I've been sitting up in my wheelchair.
I'm looking for Eli. I've searched the house. He isn't in the servants' quarters. Have you seen him at all this evening?
I saw him go down to the swamp about an hour ago, Mr. Cranston.
Go down to the swamp?
Do you think Eli has something to do with this swamp curse? Do you, Mr. Cranston?
It's beginning to look that way.
Is Randy gone? Now tonight, Quinton? I'm afraid, Mr. Cranston, that he'll sneak up to my bed some night. Or catch me in my wheelchair. You've got to protect us, Mr. Cranston. You've got to.
I'll do the best I can, Mr. Calhoun, the very best.
Thank you, my son. Thank
you. Just as soon as Miss Lane comes downstairs.
Miss Lane isn't in the house, Mr. Cranston.
What's that?
She hasn't been back since she left with you.
Hasn't come back?
I'm sure of it.
And the last time you saw Eli, he was headed for the swamp.
Yes, but
I'll see you later, Mr. Calhoun. If anyone wants me, I'll be at Devil's Dip.
Deeper into the swamp. Lost my sense of direction completely. What's that? Who's there? Who is it? Who?
Howdy. Yeah.
Who? Eli.
Yeah. Old Eli. Surprised to see me down here by Devil's Dip?
Yes, I guess I am. I was on my way back to the house. I got lost.
Very easy to do with all the willows and forties. Only the moonlight to guide you.
Well, if you're going back to the house, would you show me the way?
Yeah, but I'm going.
What did you say?
I don't think I'm going back to the house. Not just yet, Miss Lane.
I see. Well, then, I guess I'll have to find my own way back.
You don't want to go back to the house for a while, Miss Lane.
But I do. I want to very much.
You're not going back yet, Miss Lane.
Let me by.
I said you're not going back. You don't know nothing about this swamp yet. You don't know about animals that live down here. The ones that slip and crawl through the mud. They got sucked into Devil's Dip just like everything else does.
Let me go.
It draws you, Devil's Dip does. Draws you down in its black, evil belly. Where you can feel the bubbling slime oozing around your ankles. Then it creeps up to your waist.
Please.
Then up to your neck.
No.
Then your mouth.
Stop.
Higher. Higher.
No!
Who's that?
Margo, is that you?
Over here, Lamar.
Shut up.
What's the matter, Margo? Are you all right?
You better get out of here.
Margo.
Mom.
What happened, darling?
Eli. I was trying to find my way back. He stopped me. He's mad, Lamar. He's a mad, sadistic killer.
Which way did he go?
He cut through there, but you'll never find him at this underbrush.
Well, if we head back to the house, we may be able to nab him.
Can you find your way back?
It's a pass right over there. Come on, darling. Now we really do have to move fast. Ah, here we are, Margot. Out in the clearing.
Oh, thank heaven. I never want to see another swamp as long as I live.
Now, there's the house up ahead.
And a very welcome sight.
Wait a second.
What's the matter?
You see what I see coming out of the roof?
Smoke. And there are flames. Oh, Mom.
Looks like Eli really has gone out of his mind.
Help! Help! It's Lucy.
We're coming, Lucy.
Mr. Cranston! Miss Lane! Eli's at the house on fire. He's crazy, man. Out of his mind.
Yes. Good Lord.
What?
Mr. Calhoun, you can see him up there on the window.
Oh, he can't walk, Mr. Cranston. You've got to save him. You've got to.
I'll do the best I can, Lucy.
You're not going to try and get him out of that burning building alone.
I'll have help, Margot. Some very able assistance.
Lucy! Cranston! Help me! Get me out of here before I burn alive!
Need help, Mr. Calhoun?
Who's that? Who spoke?
This is the Shadow.
The voice coming out of the smoke and fire. It's the devil himself.
No, Calhoun, not the devil, but someone who seeks justice.
I don't know who you are, but you've got to help me. Help a poor old crippled man, please. Don't ask. Help me. Help me, please. Get me out of this wheelchair, for the love of heaven. You can't let me die in the flames.
Why don't you help yourself, Mr. Calhoun?
What do you mean?
Why don't you get out of that wheelchair and walk?
I can't. I'm paralyzed. I'm helpless, Shadow.
You're not paralyzed and you're not helpless, Calhoun. It's only your mind that's crippled. Your rotten, twisted mind that conceived the plan to kill your own family.
What are you saying, Shadow?
I'm saying you used this fake paralysis to mask your vicious plot to murder. That you allowed Randy to die in the swamp when you could have saved him. That Quentin met the same terrible death in Devil's Dip at your own hands. That Lucy and Eli were next on your list.
That's not true, Shadow. I've no reason to kill my own family.
They're not your own family, Calhoun. You're only their stepfather. You were determined to keep your avaricious relatives from getting your money, even if it meant killing to do it.
They're lies. All lies.
Are they, Calhoun? We'll see about that. When the fire gets really close, and the flames start licking around your wheelchair, when your lungs fill with searing smoke.
All right, Shadow. You win. You win. But you'll never take me. You'll never take me alive.
Get away from that window.
I killed myself first.
No, you won't.
Let me go.
No. Your life isn't going to end that dramatically, Mr. Calhoun. It's going to come to a very grim conclusion. At the state penitentiary.
Calhoun wasn't paralyzed at all.
Well, he was paralyzed for a while, but he got over it.
Now I am lost.
Look, darling, let's start from the fact that Calhoun was an eccentric old miser who'd secretly wanted to get rid of his greedy relatives for years.
So
one night, his stepson Randy, blind drunk, staggered toward the swamp. Calhoun saw him go and could have stopped him, but didn't. He was making a futile effort to run for the boy when he was suddenly struck down in his tracks. He lay there, a paralyzed cripple.
Well, what struck him down?
His own subconscious, Margot.
Oh, now, wait a second.
No, it's a fact, Margot, an accepted scientific fact. Calhoun was what medicine calls a psychosomatic case.
Psychosomatic?
Hmm.
Oh, yes, I read something about that during the war. Boys who were afraid to go to the front became suddenly and mysteriously crippled.
As their subconscious rendered them temporarily helpless as an excuse or alibi for their guilt.
I see. But if Calhoun was crippled, how did he push Quentin into the swamp?
When Calhoun heard Eli whistling Randy's tune and thought it was Randy back from the dead, the shock broke the psychosomatic condition.
And he regained the use of his legs.
Right. That's when he hatched the plan to kill off the rest of the family. As a paralytic, he had a perfect alibi.
When did you guess the truth, Lamar?
While Calhoun was warning me against Eli, he mentioned Quentin's death in the swamp. Yet he had no way of knowing that his son had died. I would have accused him right then. I hadn't had to get to you at Devil's Dip.
Eli was really out of his mind, wasn't he, Mark?
At the end, he was, Mark. All the others used the Indian myth for their own greedy, deceitful purposes. Eli really believed in the legend of the living swamp.
Wasn't that the scariest, huh? The shadow. Ooh, I think they should have called that one the legend of the dying swap. How about you, huh? One thing's for sure. If that family wasn't sleazy enough at the start, by the time they were over, they were literally slime balls, huh? Really, huh? Hey, take that Quentin, for example. When he lured his sister down to the swamp, I thought it was for a quickie. Quickie sand, huh? Yes. Hey, you have to admit, though, that's one way to get down to the ground, or rather into it, huh? Hey, and what about Eli, who apparently was also a drunkard? Now, if he were my servant, I don't care if his name were Eli Whitney. He'd keep his cotton-picking hands off my gin, huh?
Boy.
I wonder why exactly he torched the house. Maybe he just wanted to smoke the old man out, huh? And that old man, he should have quit while he was ahead. With Randy, then quitting, you could retire comfortably on that. Call it double devil dipping, huh? Really? I still don't fully understand his motives, though, especially for the paralysis. Perhaps he just wanted to try his hand at the wheelchair of fortune, huh? But now the only chair he'll get will be the electric one, huh? Up next, it's Escape with the Man Who Won't Be King, so scary!
Fed up with the everyday grind? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are making your painful way over the great India desert, alone and dying of thirst, while behind you, pursuing you, are the fanatical Kafirs, who once bowed to you as king, and now call for your life.
Tonight, we escape to India and two soldiers of fortune who pushed fate too far, as Rudyard Kipling told it in his famous story, The Man Who Would Be King. One Saturday night, it was my unpleasant duty to put the paper to bed alone. It was a pitchy black night, as stifling as a night can be in India in June. It was very still, save for the ticking of the clock above my desk, which seemed to shatter the black heat of the night as the hands crept toward 3 a.m. And then from the passage outside my door, I heard voices. Yeah, who's there?
Only us.
And who are you?
Oh, so you don't remember us, eh?
No, I can't say that.
How about the job per border, then?
Job per border?
Yeah, and having the authorities turn us back for impersonating newspaper men.
Newspaper men?
And then there was the train. Yeah, off of which you had us thrown, if I remember correct.
Oh, wait. That flaming red hair. That bald head. Oh, Daniel Dravot and Peachy Carnahan.
The same.
Well, what do you two want this time? If it's money, I haven't got it. And if it's a fight, it's too beastly hot.
You can rest yourself easy, sir, because we have come asking for naught except some information.
We've been all over this country, and we've concluded that India isn't big enough for such as Daniel and me.
So we are going away to be kings.
Kings in our own divine right.
What? Aye, we shall be kings.
Yeah, we've signed a solemn contract, each to help the other, and neither of us to look at liquor or women until we have become kings.
I've never heard of such a fantastic idea. Now, what do you want of me?
Nought but a look at such maps of Kafiristan as you might have about.
Maps of Kafiristan.
That's where we decided to go.
Now, don't you realize that not one single Englishman has ever gone into the Kafiristan Mountains and lived at Mount again? You're a good deal more likely to become dead men than kings.
Yeah, well, sure.
Anyway, man. I don't believe you have the slightest intention of traveling a mile outside of Delhi.
Then you should come down to the Sarai Marketplace in the morning, down where the caravans leave for the north.
Now, look. Look, you two. I'm a newsman, not a nomad. Now, why should I come down to that filthy pest hole?
I'm not so sure that you're either.
What do you mean?
You say you're a newsman, but here's the chance to see the start of the greatest story of all time, and you'd pass it up.
Because you're too blasted lazy to get up that early in the morning. Come along, Dravot, my lad.
Yeah, but if you should have a change of heart, come to the Sarai in the morning and see whether we'd be liars or not.
And so they left, those two lovable scoundrels. And I sat alone in my office, thinking. The kings of Kafiristan. Kings indeed. But then, perhaps, just perhaps, they might pull it off. And it would be something to cable home. And so it was that the next morning I was making my way through the dirty, milling crowds of the Sarai marketplace.
You should not laugh at him, Sahib.
Eh?
The witless are under the protection.
Quite so. And who is the fellow, anyway?
A mad priest, Sahib, who has arrived only this morning from Ajmer.
I see.
You
Sahib. Come, look at my camels, loaded with toys to please the eye of an Abu.
Here now. Go about your business. I haven't any use for toys.
These are wondrous toys indeed, Sahib. Fit for a king of Kafiristan.
What? My good lord. Daniel Dravot.
Quiet, come along. I have two camels just beyond the wall here. The blessings of Pir Khan on the gracious Sahib who consents to look at the poor toys of a priest from Ajmer. Over this way.
Where's Conahan?
Here we are. Permit me to present my servant, Azamir Khan.
At your service, Governor.
Well, I'll
How do you
be...
like our disguises? Do they pass?
If they fool this crowd in the Serai, they're probably good enough to get you across the border. And good enough to get you killed.
Yeah, getting killed is no part of the contract Peachy and me drawed up. Although, perhaps killing fits in with our plans in a different sense. Feel around underneath the toys there in the camel bag.
What? My good lord, the rifles.
20 brand new Lee Enfields with ammunition to match.
Yeah, and 20 good reasons to make your death certain. Any Pathan of the hill tribes would kill his own mother to get a rifle.
Now, who would harm? A poor mad priest, Sahib. Allah protects me.
Mad is right.
And so was Lord Clive and Rhodes and Bonaparte. Drive out the camels, Peachy. We have a long way to go before we become kings.
As I stood and listened to the camel bells fade away in the distance, I wondered if it might not be a glorious thing to go to Kafiristan and be a king. Years pass in India, much as they pass in any other land. It grows hot, then the rains come, and then the heat again. The paper duly records the death of a sultan in Rajputana, and the trees in the courtyard grow a few feet taller. And finally, time in its circle turned up another night, much like the one 3 years before. Once again, I sat alone in the office, listening to the clock, and waiting for some unimportant item to come over the wire from Europe. It was long after midnight when my office door slowly opened. Well, I say, you might knock first, you know.
Knock? Knock?
Hey, good Lord, man. What's wrong?
You don't know who I am, do you?
No. No, I haven't the faintest idea. Have it here. You'd better sit down, old fellow. You're in a bad way.
Yes, sir. Thank you. It's a whole year I've been walking. Right here in this very office we settled in. You sitting right there and giving us the maps. And you've been sitting there ever since? 3 years.
No. Oh, no. Man couldn't change that much in 3 years. You're not Peachy Conahan.
Yes. I was the king of Kafiristan. Me and Daniel Travis. Real crown kings we was. Just as true as gospel.
And what in the name of heaven have they done to you, Peachy?
Peachy? I knew Peachy Conahan once. He's a king. With a real golden crown on his head. Told me he does. He's dead now.
No. You're Peachy Conahan. You are. Now you must pull yourself together.
Yes. Pull yourself. You've got to keep looking into my eyes. Then maybe everything won't go to pieces.
All right. All right. Now, tell me what happened, Peachy.
We left the caravan at Jagdala, and we struck off into the hills alone.
Yes. Go on.
Weeks it was for traveling, Daniel and me. First, there wasn't no roads, and after a while, no food. But there was always the drums. Sometimes they were close, and sometimes farther off. Most of the time, we could hear them.
Somewhere.
Hold on there. Here now. It's
It's no place to be stopping. Up with you.
Oh, I'm fearing it's no use, Daniel.
What's got into him?
Well, the poor beasts are done in and starved, same as ourselves. They'll go no further.
Then we'll go on without him. I've not come this far to die on the side of a mountain.
Wait. Look, Daniel. Over the edge of them rocks.
What? Oh, men they are.
Yes, there's a score or more of them. And one goes ahead of the rest.
In naught but bows and arrows. Break out a pair of the rifles, PJ.
Right you are, Daniel.
It's now that we start to become kings.
Here you are. And some cartridges, too.
Easy now, PJ. I'll drop the straggler at the rear first. Then we'll lay a few at their feet. No harm to the one in front. We may need him. Now.
Got him, Basil!
Oh, lay on, PJ.
Hold it, Daniel. Look at him.
Ah. Flat on their blooming faces.
It's their leader. He's coming out alone.
Well and good. We'll go part way to meet him, Beachy. But keep your rifle by.
Look at him, Daniel. He's as fair as us, with yellow hair.
So he is. Part of the lost tribes, these people are.
Stopped.
I await your command, O ye who speak with the voice of thunder.
By the Lord, Airy Peachy, we're in luck. It's the old Afghan tongue he speaks. Speak up. Who are you and whence do you come?
I am high priest and the chief of the village of Bashkai. A journey of only a few heartbeats.
This Bashkai, how many people?
They are numbered in the thousands.
There are more villages in the hills.
More than a man has fingers and toes.
You hear that, Peachy? Here's our kingdom, made to order. And you? You are going to take us to Bashkai, do you understand?
I understand the voice of thunder that you speak.
Ooh, he's a smooth one, Peachy. He knows a thing or two. What's your name?
Mazur Khan Jagdaroth.
That's too long. Hey, we'll call him Peachy.
He has the look about him of an old soldiering friend of ours. Billy Fish.
So he does. Hey, we bestow a name on you. From now on, you'll be Billy Fish. And put this on your drums. Tell them two kings have come out of the mountaintops. Two kings that speak in words of thunder, so the earth trembles. Tell them two kings have come to Kafiristan. That you, Peachy?
Daniel? Why are you sitting out here in the dark?
I've been thinking. Man has to stop and think sometimes.
Anything special, Daniel?
Look at him, Peachy. Look at that blinking campfires that gleaming in the dark. Like the jewels in the crown.
Yes, Daniel. You've done a fine job for sure. Oh, 23 villages you joined together as one.
It is the army you trained to be thankful for it. 2,000 men with a fair knowledge of bearing arms.
Some of them's a bit green at it yet.
Yeah, they're ours now. Every man, jack, woman, and child. We own them, body and soul.
Yes. We're kings now, Daniel. Not proper kings yet, but we will be.
Yeah, sooner than you think, PJ.
How's that?
Now, Billy Fish told me something today that fair amazed me. These people know the craft.
You mean they're Freemasons? Daniel, it's impossible.
So help me, it's gospel true. He give the grip and everything. It's old, the craft is. Older than the memory of man. And up here in the hills, they've been preserving it all these years. Why, some of the high priests know up through the philocraft, but they don't know the third degree. You see it, Peachy? They don't know the third degree, but we do.
And Daniel, what is it you're fixing to do?
Do? We're going to be proper kings. We got them going and coming now. I'm going to turn the whole country into one grand lodge. Raise some of the priests to the third degree. And for me, I'll be the Grand Master of Tafiristan.
You ain't got the right to. We've never been officers in no lodge.
Right. What's a king got to do with asking for a right?
I'm against it, Daniel. It's no good to go fooling around with the craft.
You talk like an old woman. The thing will work. I know it will. We'll make it a blooming ceremony. Regular aprons with the symbols and the marks. All for us, Peachy. The king's a Kafiristan.
Everything is prepared, Master.
And the priests and the people wait.
Well, they haven't much longer delay. Yeah, now, Peachy, how do you like my apron?
It's a wondrous sight for fair, Daniel.
Made of white almond skin it is, and the master's mark with emerald studded.
The mark? You know the meaning of the mark?
That I do.
What's got into you, Billy? It is a thing that's passing strange, Master.
Yeah, strange and rubbish. Come along now. Ready, Peachy?
Right with you, Daniel.
Then out we go, onto the temple steps. And we'll give them what for. Knock the blinking eyes out, that's what we'll do. Look at them, Peachy. Right down on their blooming knees and yelling their fool heads off.
Oh, it's a good thing to be a king, Daniel.
The mark. Behold the mark.
It is a sign. The promised
ones have
come.
Yeah, now. What's wrong with the priest, Billy?
It looks like trouble, Daniel. No. Stand where you are, Master. They recognize the mark.
Yeah, that great stone in the floor. Why do they turn it over?
Wait.
It's the same.
There's the mark.
The promise.
Speak up, Billy Fish. What's the meaning of it?
See for yourself. Look. Daniel. Carved on the back of the stone.
Is the master's mark, all right?
And the same as the sign you wear. Only a few of the priests have known of the hidden mark on the stone.
What does it mean?
The many who have doubted you are a god doubt no longer.
And you, Billy, what do you think?
I, Master? I think that now it is the time for these.
Ooh, Daniel! Golden crowns.
Aye, how they glitter. Fit for the brow of a king.
It's what we came for.
Here now, put them on. We'll crown ourselves in our own right. Now, listen to them. You know something, Peachy? We come here to be kings, and that we are, all right. But blamed if we ain't a couple of blooming gods to boot, with a million people bowing on their knees.
Well enough, Peachy. So it was gods you became, as well as kings. But then what happened? What became of Daniel Dravot?
Dravot? I knew Daniel Dravot once. He's a king now. Daniel is. Where's the golden crown? Carnarvon was with him.
Peachy, try to pull yourself together now.
Yes, I'll try.
Good. Now you became kings, you and Daniel. Kings of all Tafiristan.
He was a fine figure, Daniel was, with his red head wearing that golden crown. He kept himself aloof from the people, so to speak. When he walked out in front of the temple, they had crawled on their stomachs to worship him.
Yes, but what happened, man?
What happened? Well, I figure mostly it was winter coming up. The winds were starting up and clouds was blowing down from the north. Oh, it could blow beastly cold, that winter wind.
Who's out there? That you, Billy? Confound it anyway. Yeah, now, what's this?
I have brought you food, Master. Of the wild sheep with curry and rice.
Oh, up off your knees, girl. Bring it inside.
Thank you, Master.
Place it there. You're a well favored wench.
I do not understand.
Why are you crawling on your knees?
Fitting way to approach the god of Kapiristan.
Mm. What's your name, girl?
Maruma Denjab.
Maruma? You married?
It has not yet been my happy fortune, Master.
You afraid of me?
You are a god.
Yeah, I mean, how do I seem to you? You find me pleasing or what?
day is more wondrous than the noonday sun. And you look the look of eagles.
Very well. You may leave now.
Thank you, Master.
Peachy. Peachy.
Oh, was you calling me, Daniel? Oh, the food's here, right?
Ah, good.
Mark that window, son. You know, winter's about due to strike and fill the passes with snow. There'll be little moving about before spring.
Yeah, you're right.
Peachy, I decided to take a wife.
But you can't do it, Daniel. We made a contract.
That was till we was kings. Well, kings we've been these many months now.
It's no good. I'll tell you now, I'm against it.
Against it? You was against using the craft, too, but look what it done for us.
This is different. Billy Fish will tell you no, the same as I do.
Billy Fish, there. Who's the king here, him or me? My mind's made up. 3 days from now, I shall have me a wife. And you can put it on the drums and tell every blight about there in the hills. The kingdom of Kafiristan don't have a queen. Keeping him, Peachy. They should have brought her in half an hour ago.
I don't know, Daniel.
How about you, Billy Fish? You put him up to stolen off, deliberate-like.
Certain preparations must be made, Master.
She'd across the court with some of the priests. Maybe they're trying to buck her up a bit, Daniel. She thinks she's going to die, you know.
Die indeed. Why, I...
Master, it is against the laws of heaven for a woman to marry a god.
I'm not a god, I'm a man. You know that by now, Billy.
No, and I should not want to think so, Master. But either way, this can mean only trouble. I beg you to reconsider.
And I beg you to keep your mouth shut, Billy. I'm through waiting. I'm going over there to talk to the priest.
Master, please.
Oh, we've got to go with him, Billy. I think it's going to mean trouble, but come on. How many men can you depend on?
No more than 20 with rifles. Most of my men are in Bashkai.
Then what shall we do?
We shall have to make a run for it, I fear. We might be safe in Bashkai.
Oh, now, you bungling fools. Bring out the girl. Well, now, that's better. Here, girl. This is no way for a bride to behave. Oh, smile now. And give us a kiss.
Oh! The witch has bitten me.
Blood, Master. Don't let them see the blood.
Look! See the blood! It's not a god or a devil, but only a man!
Here! Blood! What is the blood?
It's too late.
Back, Daniel. They're coming with knives.
They can't do this. I am the king.
We must run for it, Master. Come on, Daniel. Come on.
Confounded Edens. I'll come back and beat the blasted edge in. That's what I'll do.
Yes, Daniel. Yeah, we'll be back, all right.
How much further, Billy?
Only a short way beyond this ridge, Master.
Well, so far, so good. At least them blooming drums is stopped.
Well, we're at the top, Daniel.
Yeah. And a right good climb it's been.
Wait. Look. Seems the drums have come before us, Master.
Cut off. No less than 1,000 of them. Standing there quiet-like. With them wicked long knives in their hands.
There'll be no getting past them, Daniel.
No. We're done for. Go back, Billy Fish. Take your man away with you. Go with him, Petrie. It's me they want. I did it. Me, the king.
No, Dan. I'm sticking with you. Billy Fish, you clear out.
I am your friend. I stay with you.
You're a good man, Billy.
They're coming now, Daniel.
Peachy.
Forget it, Daniel.
I forgive you. Freely, fully.
Then let them come. There be one thing they can't change, Peachy. We've been kings. Kings in our own right. Kings of all Cabrera's town.
Sliced open poor Billy Fish like a blooming earring, and it did. There in the snow and the rocks.
Good Lord, man. But you, Peachy, you got away from them.
Got away from them, did I? Oh, no. They strung me out on a tree. They drove nails right through me hands, did you? See? Look, see? But I fooled them all right. Because the morning come and I wasn't dead. And then I made him think I'd lost my senses. And they was afraid to harm me because I was protected by Allah. They cut me down then, and after a while they let me go.
You poor devil. What of Gravin? What happened to Daniel?
Daniel? Daniel's a king? He wears a golden crown.
No. Now, what happened to him?
He's never left me. All them long months. Walking on the road back, he kept me safe. The mountains, they danced at night, but Daniel held up his hand, and Peachy came along bent double. I never let go of Daniel's hand. Hey, he's with me now. Here, in this bundle. You knew old Daniel, sir, even if it was a monoquent. Look at him now.
Oh.
Well, now you've seen that we was really kings, I'll be on my way. You'll pardon me, sir?
From his death. I sat there and stared at the bundle he had left lying on my desk. Stared as the pale shafts of dawn struck fire in the red beard. Stared at the golden crown sitting too large and heavy upon the wrinkled, mummified head of Daniel Gravett, the man who would be king. Escape is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald. Tonight we have brought you The Man Who Would Be King by Rudyard Kipling, adapted for radio by Les Crutchfield, with editorial supervision by John Dunkel. Featured in tonight's cast were Ben Wright and Wilms Herbert, with John Daner, Peggy Weber, and Jack Crucian. Special music by Ivan Dittmars.
Good night, then, until this same time next week, when once again we offer you Escape.
Oh,
Kids, now was that scary or was that scary, huh? I think they should have called that the man who would be king of the fountain. Blood fountain, huh? Really? I guess it's one instance where the coronation became the coagulation, huh? Really? It just goes to show that sometimes you have to choose between your money or your wife, huh? But at least Daniel's got what he wanted. He finally became the head of state, huh? Like nobody else, huh? Meanwhile, Peachy got crucified by the angry natives. Maybe they just wanted to cross him for double-crossing them, huh? I wonder if they impeached Peachy on the peach tree, huh? I always say, pinning someone on the tree is a subtle way of asking them to leave, huh? Really? Especially to saps, huh? But if nothing else, it proves their bark is worse than their bite, huh? But you have to admit, that's one form of discipline that really grows on you, huh? Really? It also proves the point that money is the root to all evil, huh? With that, I had better fly. So until next week, same bat time, same bat station. This is a count saying, be glad you're not in Peachy's shoes. They probably still have nails in them, huh?
No.